evening. I'm Tom Benton, currently serving as the chair of the Grand Junction Regional Airport Authority. I'll call our meeting to order. It's 5:15 on October 4th. Let's go ahead and start our meeting off with a Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
All right, quick thank you to everybody that's in attendance this evening. We do have an agenda. There's two action items on our agenda today, A and B, both relating to ground lease for Sky Adventure Building. I'd entertain a motion to approve the agenda as presented.
So move.
Second.
Second.
Clay, there you go. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, same sign. Motion carries. We'll do a real quick roll call verbally so that we know who's here for a public record. Commissioner Velarde?
Here.
Commissioner Tuffley?
Present.
Commissioner Taggart?
Here.
Mr. Schrader is absent. Mr. Marshall?
Here.
He's online? Great. Let me stop up and go back. Commissioner Schrader, can you hear us? Okay. Commissioner Marshall?
Here.
Nice to have you here.
Thank you.
Commissioner Brayback?
I am here as well.
Thank you. And myself, the chair is here. And our airport staff, let's go ahead and recognize those staff members that are here today. Ben, you're going to lead the charge?
I'll lead the charge. Sorry, you've got me instead of Cameron. So we have Executive Director Angela Padalecki, Accounting Coordinator Shayla Flesh, and myself, Ben Peck, Director of Facilities.
Very good. And online, we have our counsel, Dan Raymer, and Jeremy Lee, a consultant who is Meet and Hunt. And also, is there anybody else on there, Shayla?
We have got Scott Oakbone. And then we've got Brad Rolfe.
Okay.
That covers it.
All right. And in our audience today, I'd like to welcome Scott Sweeney, the new CEO for Westrock. Scott, nice to have you here.
Appreciate it.
Very good. Commissioner comments this evening. I saw Dylan leaving a little bit early. Looks like he's been very busy. There are construction projects as well. We have an equivalent of iron out here for the big iron auction, maybe, that might be coming up.
Mm-hmm.
They're currently engaged in an airport. I think they got rained out, though, looks like, for the last couple, 3 days, perhaps. So, great. Lots of activity. The other commissioner comment that anybody else have any? I'll just make one more. A couple of months ago, I was reading an article, I think it might have been in the Wall Street Journal or Kiplinger's or Barron's or something, just kind of focused on, since we're in election season, board of directors commentary and social media. And I thought it was rather effective, not the political thing is bringing this up, it's just kind of the timing
for this.
It's
that
season.
For some reason.
But I think, you know, the article focused on board of directors' roles on TikTok, Instagram, Facebook, whatever social media it was, and just a kind of reminder to represent themselves professionally, respectfully, thoughtfully, visionarily in some cases. And if they are in the mix of kind of chatting about things that's related to their backyard, to always be respectful of those events in their backyard. So I know we do have campaigns coming up and we have other things going on in our world. So just, it was, the article is well done with that. All right. Do we have any citizen?
Are we on mute because Stan just texted me and said he can't hear anything?
Shouldn't be on mute.
We're on mute on here because I did this the other day. Yes, that's why.
How about now?
Okay.
All right. Very good. Dan, sorry, you missed us there. Welcome. Glad you're here.
That's why Dad didn't respond.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Thanks for the reminder that we were on mute. Okay. Are there any citizens?
Thanks, Tom. We can hear you now just fine.
Great. Thank you. Is Thaddeus with us?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah, Tom. I'm here. Sorry about the delay.
Thank you, Thaddeus, for joining us virtually. I appreciate that. So for the record, Commissioner Schrader is also in attendance via his iPhone. Okay. Citizen comments this evening. Ben, do we have any?
No comments.
Okay.
Mr. Chairman.
All right. Let's go ahead and move into our action item this evening. Their consent to assign the ground lease at Sky Adventures. So presenting that will be
Sure. So we're really excited to have the There's two action items related to the same property. So the first is the lease transfer from Sky Ventures to Westar. The second is an amendment to the corresponding lease to add additional term. So all outlined in your packet, but Chairman, I also wanted to see if you'd like to have Scott speak a little bit about this project, also himself. I think everyone's curious about his background, so.
Yeah, you bet. Scott, if you want to join us up here and kind of over there by Colin maybe or something, you're a little closer. Ken, welcome.
Thank you. A little bit about me, I guess.
Sure.
So 35 years in the business, through various lives and iterations, right? But joined Westar about 4.5 years ago. Fantastic company in comparison to a few that I've been with. I did spend about 25 years with the OEM, and prior to that I was in the Navy, where I learned my trade. I was an avionics technician by trade, so been a long and good career, but real happy to join the team here in Westar, or Grand Junction in Westar. So it's a fantastic area, fantastic people, great site. Looking forward to building on what Dave has built over the last 14 years. So big shoes to fill, but he's still on board with me for a while, so that's going to be really good.
Good deal. Angela?
So do you want to talk a little bit about the building and kind of what the immediate plans are and kind of how it fits into the long-term vision?
Right. So obviously we're going in, we're looking at new structures over this way. But the Sky Adventures building, the first thing that we need pretty desperately is shop space, right? Mm-hmm. In lieu of waiting for my new hangar here, that third floor there is just the right size. I need to put a seat shop in there, things of that nature. I'm hiring for that as we speak. Things of that nature. So we're going to continue doing maintenance out of that site, but we've got to invest in that building to actually produce that third floor and get it set up for all of the seating that we're doing. So that, and I think we might move a couple of things around the office space that we've got in there. We've got additional employees and administrative staff that we're hiring, things of that nature. So the facility actually works out real great for us, especially with that manufacturing.
We're excited because I think we've talked about this a little bit with the board, but just to remind everyone and, you know, on the record, that building has largely been used for non-aeronautical purposes in recent years. So it was a Westar hangar long ago that they then sold to Sky Adventures, and Sky Adventures took that hangar and they took half of it and turned it into office space and made a small hangar adjacent to that. Westar has actually leased that small hangar for quite a while now. And use that space. So I think I'm sure they'll continue to use that hangar. And there's plans to rip the office space out of the hangar because there's a little office space in the hangar. But that office space was intended to support a much larger business than was really just ever came to fruition there. So that tourism business and then having a restaurant built on that third floor. So the third floor is just kind of partially built out. So really excited because the space has been, there's a lot of vacancy over there, and then we've allowed 12-month non-aeronautical subleases for some of the office space, just to make as much use of that building as they could. Mm-hmm. But this really represents a shift of that beachfront property back to pure aeronautical use, so we're really excited.
Yeah, we're going to fully absorb that.
Additional questions for Scott? Scott, there's a couple of us on the board that were intimately involved with original construction and financing of that, so we're glad to see it going back to aeronautical use.
Glad to be available. Yeah, we're looking forward to it as well.
No.
Very good. All right. So, further presentation on this item or questions about it? Okay. I'd entertain a motion to approve the ground lease assignment on the Sky Adventures building. Dan, will that be sufficient just to reference this item in that fashion?
Yes.
Okay, very good. Is there a motion to approve?
So moved. Is that okay, Dan?
Fair enough.
motion, do we have the right motion up here right now?
Number A.
For the consent to assignment of ground lease from Sky Ventures to Westar Aviation.
Second.
Very good.
Bam, bam.
So it's been moved and seconded to approve the assignment of current lease between Sky Ventures LLC to Westar Elevation, Aviation, excuse me, LLC, and authorize Angela to sign, execute the consent to assignment.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
No problem. Further discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. Motion carries. Thank you. All right, I appreciate staff's in-depth involvement in that, as well as keeping the board informed on this, so we can be prepared. There's another item on here, and that's the First Amendment to the Sky Adventure Ground Lease. That's part of your agenda today, and this is an amendment. And Angela, do you want to cover what the focus of this is?
Sure. So the main changes that this amendment makes is it extends the term. Right now, there's 9 years from a remaining term. It extends it by 10 years, and then includes two additional five-year options to extend that are conditional based on meeting minimum investment requirements in the facility.
And those numbers tie to something, probably, in your world?
So the way those numbers, we kind of went back and forth, because as Scott mentioned, they want to make investments in the building. But all of this is happening pretty quickly as they're working through and trying to get to financial close. And so the methodology we took is we actually used the 2810 hangar, the Mesa, the old Mesa hangar, as an example. So that hangar needed quite a bit of work when Westar took that over. And so we looked at the investments that were called out in the lease that it was, again, that it had conditional extension options. And so we actually used those same numbers and then just escalated them based on inflation to get to these new numbers. So the methodology is very similar to what was in the Mesa hangar.
Very good. Additional questions for Angela or Scott at this point? Okay, hearing none, I'll entertain a motion to approve the First Amendment, Sky Adventures Ground Lease Agreement, to extend the lease term and authorize Angela to sign.
So moved.
Thank you. Is there a second?
Second.
Very good. It's been moved and seconded to approve the First Amendment to the Sky Adventures Ground Lease Agreement and to extend the lease term. Further discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same. Thaddeus, we got you in there. Thank you. Motion carries unanimously. All right, very good. Discussion items today. It's our 2023 draft budget presentation.
So what have you all been waiting for?
That's right.
Yes.
Scott, you're welcome to stick around for this, or if you have family matters at home.
Yep.
I'll let you guys do business, okay. But
thank you for joining.
Actually, a few cards before.
Thanks, Scott.
Please reach out anytime.
Very good. Thank
I'd
you, sir.
I'd like to get very involved with everything.
Thanks. Nice meeting you. We'll just do a quick overview tonight, because we're going to actually do the full budget review at the main board meeting in 2 weeks. Just to give you a kind of a heads up of where the schedule's at, this is just our initial presentation and notice to the public that'll get posted tomorrow in Sentinel. And then we'll have the main public hearing and go over all the details at the regular board meeting. With a target to actually adopt the budget in at the November 3rd. Basically, to start this, we started with all of our activity assumptions, which was Angela's wheelhouse.
So, first objective with this budget, as you can imagine, is for us to maintain a strong financial position while staying on track with our ambitious CIP and maintaining competitive fundraising charges. So that's what you're going to see in this budget, and that's I think those themes will come out. From an assumption perspective, when it comes to activity levels, we're very conservative. So just philosophically, when it comes to the role of the budget at an airport like ours, we look and say, okay, what do we think is the because we want to make sure we're earning enough to cover those expenses, right? So what do we need to keep the airport running? And what is the minimum amount of revenue we need to generate in order to make that work? So we're especially conservative on the revenue side. That's true historically, and that's just from a philosophical perspective. I think it's most appropriate. And that's evidenced this year by the fact that, you know, while Delta unexpectedly exited the market, we still anticipate exceeding our revenue budget this year. So it demonstrates the level of conservatism, but we think, again, that's appropriate because we are an airport authority and there's not a backstop, right? We have to make sure that we can maintain our financial health regardless of what happens. So just want to make sure that's clear, because when you look at the activity assumptions, what we've assumed is that the airlines will continue to recover, but that recovery is going to continue to be slow next year. So financially, we do not want to have to, we are not planning that the airport, that the airlines recover a lot next year compared to what we're seeing right now. We hope that we're very wrong in the right direction on this, but we're confident in these numbers because this is what they've been able to maintain even through their hardest times. And they report that things are getting better and they're pretty optimistic about next year. So you can see here the assumptions on flights. We have not assumed for financial planning purposes that Delta returns next year. While we're hopeful of that, certainly, we do not want to plan on that. And then with Frontier exiting the market, we are again assuming that they will not return next year. So conservative levels. And you can see over on the right, sorry, I think the glare might be a little hard for the folks on the side, but what you see in the orange bars is the capacity. So that's the total, and that's in seats. So that's the total number of seats in the market. And this is all one directional, right? So it's the number of seats departing in our market. The blue line is the actual enplanements. And so you can see that relationship between those two represents the load factors. And in 2022, we see load factors at a very high level. In 2023, you see that we're planning for more capacity as airlines, especially in those peak summer months, we anticipate that we'll be able to add a little bit more capacity in. And this is based on conversations with them. And so what that should do is that should bump down slightly the load factor. So that's how we're planning. We're planning that things start to get closer to a normal level next year in both fronts, but that we have not fully recovered back to 2019 levels financially. Any questions on this? The other thing I do want to point out, and something Shayla and I have talked about when we're planning for our budget, is now that we have our airline incentive program, where when new service comes into our market, in the case of Delta, they would qualify for incentives. We charge them very little, if anything, depending on what requirements they meet, in that first year of service. And so when you think about new service coming next year, now we do reap the non-airline benefits, but the airline revenue really isn't there anyway. It's a long-term investment. And so that's the other reason why we think this level of conservatism is appropriate, because when you think about us being off on those numbers, it's really only on one side of the house, on the corresponding non-airline revenue, not on the airline revenue.
How do you feel about Allegiant 2 to 4 times weekly?
I'm feeling confident in that. So what we see for next year already in the schedule, is Las Vegas service continuing to be twice weekly. I think we have a chance that in the relatively near term, the next couple of years, we could see that frequency increase. Those flights are full almost no matter what time of year it is. And I think having some sort of midweek flight option could really enhance that service for them. So they're facing that pilot shortage as the legacy carriers are gobbling up their pilots. So growth isn't an option right now for that, but we're hopeful on that. And we see the flight to Mesa returning in February in their schedules. So we were conservative with the Mesa flight because that's the one that, that's the first lever they've pulled as they've pulled back capacity when they're constrained. So we hope to see that. And then for the summer, the LAX flights were very full. And so we continue to talk to them about a wider season. The year-round service at John Wayne didn't perform well enough to maintain, but the LAX service performed very well in the summer. So just really helping that seasonal schedule to correspond to our seasonal schedule. So.
Mitchell, what's happened to the Denver Air Connect? Is there any chance that that's going to reemerge at any time?
So what they're using the Dornier for right now, so the jet that they were using for that service, they have started flying commercial service into, well, to Telluride from Denver and from Phoenix. And so they have code share arrangements with United out of Denver and American out of Phoenix to provide those passengers connecting opportunities to Telluride. That airport is extremely constrained on what aircraft can fly there. So most commercial airlines don't have aircraft that can fit into that airport. And that's service that is working really well for them. They are a risk-averse airline. They prefer contracted routes where the revenue is guaranteed. So they fly a lot of EAS routes as well. They have NCAA charters, but ultimately that at-risk service that they were flying to Centennial is just something they don't have a risk appetite for right now. And as we've talked to them about de-risking that through, you know, the Air Service Alliance has certainly done that. That just hasn't been a feasible option for them.
What is an EAS route or EIS route?
Okay, sorry. So Essential Air Service.
Gotcha.
So when you think of MOAB, that's our closest EAS market. So the Essential Air Service program is a federally funded program that ensures small communities have access to air service.
Okay.
And really, I mean, the roots of it come back to making sure that you have access to Washington, D.C. is how it really works. So we're a community that is too large to qualify for that, but those routes actually get bid out, and then it's contracted, it's guaranteed revenue. You can still have financial upside if you make more than that, but you're guaranteed that revenue through the federal government. And it, historically, it can be lucrative for the right type of small carrier when it's a good fit, and it's been a good fit for them. So
it's really, they just repurposed.
Hello. They've repurposed those aircraft, and while we've continued to talk to them about this, it just comes down to their business model and what they're comfortable with. And the person who kind of ran that side of the business retired, and they haven't filled that position. And so it's a side of the business that they aren't currently engaged in, and they're not open to re-exploring.
That's a shame.
Yeah.
It's a good service.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we all miss it. I actually just joke that it's because Colin moved to Centennial. And it was way too convenient.
Can't you roust up somebody to fly that route, even if it's not to him, Colin?
Yeah. So I think it was pretty brutal.
That's painful.
So as you look at these flights and you say there's recessionary risk in our nation for 2023, are any of these, if you look at those, any of those might be prone to be pulled back?
I don't think so. I mean, right now I think I would look at us and say that we have a minimum level of service. I mean,
okay.
This service makes exceptionally good sense, right?
Okay.
And when I think that's something that Grand Junction is a huge point of strength for Grand Junction is that it's just a well-hedged market. People come here for leisure. There's a lot of business here. It is surrounded by beautiful places and resorts, but it's not a pure resort community. And then the energy sector provides this, I mean, it's kind of this extra hedge, but it's this extra bright element that oftentimes when airlines are having their hardest times, when their largest variable expense is at a high price, typically Grand Junction, the demand is very high and the price elasticity typically goes down during those times as well.
Fair enough. Any other questions on this slide?
Numbers. So when looking and doing the 2023 budget, we obviously started with our 2022 forecast. And we went with a very conservative forecast, obviously, for the year. This was started in July, and we've made several tweaks and updates to it. But it has not been completed. done with the newer information we've gotten in the last 4 months or so. And that being said, that mainly comes into play with the projected cash balance at the end of the year. We're hopeful that we're pretty confident it'll be higher than what we have projected at the 17 million there. But again, wanted to keep it all pretty conservative, especially as we use these numbers to go forward into next year's budget. The 2023 budget, again, based a lot off of 2022, it's the current knowledge we have of what we've got going on, with some assumptions. The main shift that really moved these numbers is actually all of our capital expenditures, mainly the projects. There were probably about 5 or 6 million we had originally budgeted for this year that's kind of going to be shifted to next year. And that's why you see that big shift of the capital and these most of the associated contributions being shifted into next year as well. Just kind of a high level overview because we're going to dig into it much deeper in 2 weeks. But any questions or did I miss anything you'd love to point out?
I think the themes that we want to make sure jump out as you look at, you know, the big heavy budget documents are that very conservative, we think, net operating income of $1.2 million. And when you think about us, our construction, our runway project, and our ability to fund our match, right? When I see $1.2 million, I see $12 million in project, right? And so when you think about that, we have quite a ways to go on that project still. And just our airfield CIP as a whole, we think we have in the next 10 years, $140 to $190 million out there in costs. But if during our hard times, we can still generate $1.2 million in that operating income to help cover those expenses, and we have the cash reserves that we have, we're confident we can continue with that program at whatever pace is necessary. I also want to mention that this does incorporate 15% rate increases with the airlines, which we have discussed with them in our use and lease agreement discussions. And they're aware that we may face 15% rate increases for a few years to come. We're kind of going back to that negotiation time that was pre-pandemic, and our rates and charges are behind, but we want to be fair with the airlines on getting them caught up. And making sure that our airport doesn't become a place where airlines grow more slowly here because we're expensive to operate at. So there is a risk for that, so we're trying to balance that. And we are hopeful that we will reach that goal of having executed use and lease agreements by January 1st. So this incorporates those 15% rate increases. It incorporates the parking rate increases you approved last month. It also assumes for those revenue line, those non-airline revenue lines, that we resume, that they also start becoming more normal, if you will. So when we look at our historical averages on a per employment basis for some of our main non-airline revenue streams like parking, concessions, rental cars, they look different than they look now. Some of that is just changes in behavior that are likely going to stick. But a lot of it is because leisure travel that's been the dominant factor in travel recovery. It's not been led by business travel recovery. Business travelers travel differently and they spend differently. And so it's looking at taking what we see now, taking what we saw historically, and saying, okay, we're going to assume things, you know, continue to trend closer to normal, which is actually a lower per employment level of non-airline revenue for each of those business lines. So when you're looking at that, I think you'll see those trends show up. That it's like, oh, okay, $5 per, on average, per employment for a specific, I think that one was rental cars, right? So $5 per employment was our pre-pandemic average. We've been averaging over $7. That's because the rental car companies, their business has changed in the pandemic. It likely won't go back to $4.50 is what we were at before, but we budgeted that $5 to say that way if we do see a swing back to much more business-dominated travel, and as their supply chain issues get worked out and the fleets go up, we expect those to get closer to normal. So just wanted to mention that because there's just a lot of conservatism in the revenue budget, and in the expense budget, we've factored quite a bit in as well. Now, if we see it, you know, if we see 10% inflation across the board, then we're going to be close on our expense budget. But our staff has done a great job just figuring out ways to keep costs low and manage through that. But what we've done on the expense side is put together a conservative budget that feels realistic. We're not going to budget for 20% increases across the board on all supplies. That's silly. Even if we saw a 40% increase in some of them this year, you know, we are assuming that things will get closer to normal next year.
Sheila, just one question there on capital expenditures versus capital contributions. I know we have a match situation, but that delta is 17%. Is that a timing issue that some of the capital projects we may not be reimbursed until 2024? Because that is a significant difference.
Right. And that's because that's all capital expenditures. So that's including non-AIP.
Okay.
So that includes our
okay.
Big parking lot expansion. And then we do have the 422 we're intending to do next year, which CDOT is paying for most of it, but we do have a higher match on that, which is closer to 20%.
Could you do me a favor for the detailed one on the board is kind of separate those two capital, because when they're combined like this, it kind of jumps at you there's such a delta.
Yes.
If they're two sets, I think that helps.
And we have all capital projects on one page in the budget packet too, so you'll be able to see them all spelled out. But we'll separate the buckets in summary form as well. But you will be able to see it. But yeah, I mean, and it's further muddied too, I'll add, by the fact that much of the payments that are made next year are for the construction project that was grant funded with that end of year grant last year, that $50 million grant, where there's no match. So the math is wonky when you look at it in aggregate. That's the technical term for it.
Yes.
Wonky
enough. So I do have the slightly less summarized version in the packet I give you. The with grant funding and without are separated. That does include CDOT in there, which obviously throws muddies that a little bit. And then you've got the full capital.
Because it also includes $5 million for a terminal project next year. We need to replace the loading bridges. There's just some additional work that needs to be done. We have, as you all will recall, under the building infrastructure law, that bill, we have entitlement grants that come from that now. So we have a $2.2 million grant that we have access to for this year, and it just sits there. We can draw on it next year. You can do a project together and draw on both, but we'll get one of those grants every year for the next 5 years of about $2.2 million. It has a 10% match on it.
But that's not it.
This is all in here. So that's where it's all the runway work. It's all the capital work at the airport. So that's where that list too, I think that'll help bring this to life on what's the work we're actually planning to do next year. And then what this budget's for is it budgets for that aggressive schedule that we discussed actually yesterday in our CIP meeting with the FAA and CDOT. We have the annual CIP planning meeting. So that assumes that we get the maximum amount of grant funding we're asking for, and we get it early, so all that work can get done. So we likely will not spend that much money next year, but we want to make sure that from a budget appropriation perspective, that we're able to run with the best case scenario plan, knowing that we're under this umbrella of safety with a budget that's big enough. So.
Ron, I know you and Clay have been in this head over heels. Asked probably lots of good questions along the line. Is there anything in this that hasn't yet been mentioned that you guys have chatted about? Do you want to weigh in on any of this?
Nothing I can think of. We had a good discussion towards the end of the meeting with all of us, so I thought I was satisfied.
Yeah, I think once you have some details, there'll be some questions probably on some different pieces, but not in the consolidated.
So our forecast is where we think we'll end up. That call
this year.
At the end of this year.
That's where we thought we'd end up this summer. So I think, and the picture's gotten better.
Yes.
So I think when it comes to our cash balance, I think we'll be much. that would mean on the budget that we're more like 14 million. But it still preserved the ability to do work this fall. It was before that forecast doesn't account for the fact that we decided to push the parking lot project into 2023 to correspond with the 422 project, those kind of things. So.
And I should say, we had our questions answered, but there may be some line item questions that you all might have that we don't get yet.
Thanks, Clay. So you expect we'll probably have to make an amendment to the 2022 budget then, based on the increase in revenues?
I don't think so now, because of where the capital projects sit. You know, now that we've kind of been reconciling the capital projects and where we'll sit, I think we have enough appropriated.
You know, as we're in the economic times we are now, it feels gutsy to have a 12% increase in revenue and a 14% increase in operating expenses there at the top line. But your explanation of going to the airlines and saying, look, guys, you get a 15% increase in the, you know, $200,000 a parking fee increase kind of gives some backstopping, shoring up for that. It also, you know, the little banker side to me says, what sort of sensitivity analysis have we done if we lose a couple of those funds? You know, and then where does that, I'm sure you guys have done that. And looked at that.
I wanted to talk about, you know, that's where even just from this onset to kind of to set the stage as you look at that full budget packet, I wanted to make sure we talked about the activity assumptions, because I think that level of conservatism is where I find comfort that we could be wrong in a lot of areas.
We're feeling pretty comfortable that if we go to the airlines and say, look, here's an increase of 15%, they're not going to push back to the point where they say we're going to do something different. Feel pretty good about it.
Yes, so we've already talked to them about this. So it's being, this is fortunately and unfortunately, it's part of that broader, use and lease agreement discussion, right? And so I think because we continue to have discussed the airport imposing those limits that we won't increase rates and charges by more than 15% a year, for an airport that has a huge capital project going on, that's a position of vulnerability if you're an airline there. Because some airports will just shift and just fully book that in the rates and charges right away. And so they can go through the roof. So this helps mitigate that risk. I mean, a runway project is not a controversial project to an airline, a runway project like ours. We're not building it for political reasons. We're not building some beautiful terminal that they don't want. It's a runway. They don't get to operate here without it. So I think that's helped, but I would not say there isn't pushback.
But it's in their world, a $600,000 increase or whatever that number is inside of here is small dollars to an airline. I mean, Grand Junction pushing that kind of a number to their way, they'd much rather argue over the bigger airport increases in fees than ours, I would think.
Yeah, and that's where within the airport team, there are team members who are assigned to small airports, and they have sometimes 50 small airports. And their job is to keep the rates and charges under control for their airline there, and they're looking at a cost per in-plane passenger. And that CP, we've talked about that CP, we can look at it airport-wide and say this is the average CP, but they're looking for their individual airline based on their business standards, how much space they lease, what their operations look like. And so that's something we look at with this too, to see are we still maintaining a competitive CP, but just given the environment we're in when it comes to cost escalations, I mean, I don't know of any airport that's not having to increase airline rates and charges.
Yeah,
so,
fair enough, Angel.
But it's hard for them too, because they're facing huge cost increases. So everyone is trying to just work together to keep things successful in that market.
And certainly as demand stays strong for them out of here, they can pass that on in the ticket prices in some fashion.
Typically, our CP is below $10,
okay.
Which, you know, that compares to a lot of small airports have CPs that are far above that. I mean, it's not uncommon for them to be over $20. And so it keeps us in that competitive position. Again, we're not an airport full of premium passengers that have more financial value to the airlines either. But I think we're staying in our relative position in the world. And I think that's the right strategy as we try to catch up.
Okay. thank you for your thoughtful explanation and insights. So, appreciate it, Shayla. Anything else on this item? Do you have another slide for us tonight?
That was it.
Great. And Colin, you're here, but you've been awfully quiet. Is there anything you'd like to update us on?
All just here in case I can help.
Oh, we got a pond out there right now, don't you?
Bring some bass and transplant over there. Things progressing as you would expect?
I think so. Okay. I think it's good that we got that rain. That's a good thing long term.
Helps compaction.
Yeah, it does.
Okay. Any other business? Daddy, it's nice to see you here. Thanks for joining multiple ways.
Multimedia.
Wow, we're going to get out of here early tonight.
It's not even 6.
That's right.
Well, that's great.
Let's make a call.
All right, I'll call for anything for good of the order. I'll offer up one thing. The Benton family expanded by 1 last night.
Congratulations.
Little Blakely, Montana was born about 9 o'clock.
Oh, that's cool.
Great name.
You can see where her parents want to go.
Yeah.
They're working.
That's awesome,
yeah.
Tom.
So,
congrats.
So. All right. That said, I'll call all those in favor to adjourn the meeting. Say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. Motion carries. We're adjourned. Thank you.
3-6.
I'm off till the 13th.
Yeah, that sounds good.
No, it's just we're supposed to go to Vegas.
And that's what it's one of the rare times where it actually canceled.